This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Could British Columbia be the very last province to enact a plan to fight poverty? That's the question asked by BC Campaign 2000 in its latest report card on child poverty. Statistics show that the child poverty rate in BC rose from 14.5% in 2008 to 16.4% in 2009. The BC rate was only slightly lower than the Manitoba rate of 16.8%, and it was much higher than the national rate for all 10 provinces. That was 14%. A March 21, 2011 article in the province newspaper titled British Columbia, the province that doesn't look after its kids, included a grim prediction that an entire generation of young people in BC may be headed for a bleak future due to the effects of poverty. We're joined on the phone by Adrian Montani of First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition, and in the studio by Jim McGregor, Community School Coordinator at Nanaimo District Secondary School.
And welcome back to People First Radio, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And hi, Adrian.
Hi.
Adrian Montani, the First Call report card states that the BC Liberal government has been resisting calls to follow the lead of Liberal, Conservative, and NDP governments elsewhere in Canada. BC cabinet ministers continue to shy away from targets and timetables. The government appears to be saying that existing provincial programs and policies somehow amount collectively to an anti-poverty program. Why is First Call asking for targets and timetables, and why is the BC government shying away from them?
Well, I think for the second question, you might have to ask them why they're shying away from it. But I think the reason we're asking for targets and timelines is because that's how we hold ourselves accountable. If there's no target, then you don't know if you hit it. And if there's no timeline, then it kind of goes forever, and we're always working on the problem and not really. And that's what's been going on for the last 20 or more years, is that we haven't made progress in Canada and certainly in BC in the last decade. We haven't been addressing the issue with some specific goals in mind. Let's bring that child poverty rate down. Let's cut it in half. Let's, by this date. That's what we need to see, because then we can stop at the end of each year and say, well, are we there? Are we closer? If not, what else do we need to do? That's what you do in any reasonable plan.
Is there some truth, though, to the notion that the existing provincial programs and policies amount to, in a collective sense, to a type of anti-poverty program?
I think there's truth in that there are programs in place, certainly, that that bring children out of poverty. There are tax credits and rental supplements, child care subsidies. There are government programs that contribute and would be parts, continuing to be parts of a comprehensive plan. But the problem is that obviously those things aren't enough. The child poverty rate has started to go up again and has stayed rather high in this province for quite a long time. So even during good economic times, those government programs that are in place haven't been enough, and that's what we'd like to see addressed.
The evidence and recommendations in the Child Poverty Report Card call for bold and focused action from both the provincial and federal governments to significantly reduce child and family poverty. What are some of the key recommendations?
I think on the income side, the government did move on moving the minimum wage up, and we're happy to see that. It now needs to be, continue to go up and be indexed in the future so that the lowest wage workers in the province, or some of them, get an increase when the cost of living goes up, as other people do. Seniors' pensions are indexed, that kind of thing. And that would apply also to welfare rates. Some of the very poorest people who are not able to work for one reason or another on income assistance, way below the poverty line. We'd like to see those rates brought up to something approaching the poverty line that would actually cover people's rent and cost of food and necessities. And then we'd like to see that indexed as well, so that annually, as the cost of living, if it continues to go up, those people don't fall into deeper poverty again. Same, we're asking of the federal government to index the Canadian Child Tax Benefit so that it also keeps pace with the actual costs that are facing families. So it's a great, the federal tax credit is a great public policy instrument to raise families out of poverty. It's just not doing it enough. So that, those are some of our recommendations. And then on the service side, so those are the income supports we'd like to see in place. But on the service side, we'd like to see child care, a publicly funded child care program that doesn't cost parents an arm and a leg and allows them to go to work, because that's one of the chief barriers for families with young children, and that would cost them maybe $10 a day like it does in Quebec. And other supports or public policy issues would be post-secondary education. A lot of young families are struggling under, well, there's two reasons we'd like post-secondary education costs to come down. One is that those who can afford to go end up with huge amounts of student debt right at the point when they're starting families and starting their careers. And the other is for many, the tuition rates are so high now, and they can't face that much debt because they don't have a prospect of paying it off, so they don't even get into post-secondary education, so it's a huge barrier. So that those are some of the kinds of things we'd like to see on the income side, some support, some social policy supports that support young families.
We've been hearing about the concept of a living wage, and there certainly has been discussion about minimum wages and levels of minimum wage. Is this ongoing discussion, I guess you might say, that developed over the last few years, this discussion about living wages, is it helpful? Has it illuminated aspects of the poverty problem? Has it brought more evidence to light for people who might need to have that evidence placed in front of them?
I think it has, because as much as we praise government for raising the minimum wage, it, even when it gets to $10.25 an hour next May, it won't support a family raising children. It's just too low. So we need employers, both the public sector, because government's a big employer and contracts out a lot of work to various for services and of various kinds, and the private sector. So we've got into good conversations with the private sector about what kind of wages people are paying and what does it actually cost. That's what we've calculated when we've done the living wage calculations. What does it actually cost families to cover their basic expenses and be a little bit above the poverty line so that they're not in chronic financial distress and can afford to feed their children well and participate in society in a reasonable way that most people expect to be able to do so, cover their shelter costs, etc. But it's not a very generous budget still. Even a living wage budget doesn't allow savings and house purchases or those kinds of things. But let's get them. So we've been having those conversations. It's opened up some really good conversations with municipal governments. The city of New Westminster has passed a living wage policy. And we're having regular conversations with other private and public sector employers about making that part of their commitment to improve the health of children and families in the province.
The report states that child poverty is an outcome of corrosive and unsustainable income inequality that has grown in BC and Canada, that inequality undermines children's potential, provokes a host of short and long-term social and economic harms that affect individuals and communities. Is it possible, and I think I'll direct this question to you, Jim McGregor, is it possible, given the massive economic power that has been placed into the hands of international corporations and banks, we've all been reading about that recently and learning about it, is it possible that the provincial government actually doesn't have the power to decrease the widening gap between ultra-rich and poor segments of society?
Well, it very well could be at first look at it. Of course, governments do have a large control over our lives in so many ways, and especially if you're on the lower end of the income scale, you tend to become dependent upon government services and income. So, what I've learned as a community school coordinator, I was a kids at risk outreach worker before that for many years assigned to Harewood, which by all measures has a concentration of child poverty. What I've learned and what our organization has learned is that perhaps one of the ways to address that question is through connection to community. We know that when people are connected to their community, they can take action together and begin to occupy, to fill in some of the gaps where government doesn't touch or doesn't have a large influence. And I think that that's one of the solutions that we might talk about in a bit more depth, if you'd like.
This is CHLY.ca, CHLY 101.7 FM. You're listening to People First Radio.
According to the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, poverty is consistently linked to poor health, lower literacy, poor school performance for children, more crime, and greater stress for family members. It is society as a whole that bears the cost of poverty through higher public health care costs, increased policing and crime costs, lost productivity, and foregone economic activity. Public opinion polls in British Columbia and other parts of Canada have consistently shown strong support for fighting poverty. In a 2008 poll, 87% of BC respondents thought the Prime Minister and the Premier should both set concrete targets and timelines for reducing poverty. Just this fall, the BC Office of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives calculated that poverty costs British Columbia $8.1 billion to $9.2 billion every year. The estimated cost of a poverty reduction plan would be $3 billion to $4 billion a year, or less than half of what we lose to poverty. We're speaking with Adrian Montani of First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition and with Jim McGregor, the community school coordinator at Nanaimo District Secondary School.
Jim, in our email communication about this discussion, you wrote the following. And I'm quoting from your comments, "We are wired to care, share, and be fair. When we go against that, we get into trouble. We succeed when we connect." And you were talking about that a bit earlier, when we cooperate. Tell us more about that.
Well, it's something that I think all listeners know intrinsically inside yourself, but I'd like to flesh it out a bit. And some of this comes from the work of a woman called Lynn McTaggart, and she wrote several books. One was called The Field, and her latest is called The Bond, in which she examines this. And she shows through many reliable scientific studies that we are made to work together. And when we go against that, we do get into trouble. And so I think that we have a large opportunity there to work together. We know, just briefly, two of the findings, just one of the findings, a study was done on people with heart disease, and more than 50% of those people who suffered from diseases of the heart were lonely and isolated from their community. So that's a pretty good indicator of the path. So ways to connect, for me particularly, what I see in Nanaimo is schools are within walking distance of most people in their community, and the four community schools in Harewood are open for people to use that facility to connect and to fill in the gaps, the programs and services that can lessen the effects of poverty.
Adrian Montani, Jim McGregor is talking about people who have stronger social ties with groups and the notion that they, or the research has shown, that they tend to be healthier. And I'm wondering if you can elaborate on the links of our interconnectedness with the prevention of poverty.
Well, I think a lot of the research around social cohesion, you know, sort of what makes a healthy society, and certainly a healthy society is what helps make healthy children and youth, or an environment for them to grow up in, comes from reducing income inequality. A lot of the social ills that plague us are when the gap between the rich and the poor is very high, is, increasing rates of violence, of mental health problems, of physical and mental illness, addictions, and incarceration rates, teen pregnancies. A lot of the social ills that we see in very unequal societies are reduced in more equal societies. So that's where government does have a role in looking at how do we reduce that gap. Government, both federal and provincial, controls taxation. And so we can have a more progressive taxation system or a more regressive one. And that means sometimes making those who earn a lot contribute a bit more so that we can afford the kinds of social supports for those, and bringing the incomes for those at the bottom who can't work, and for those, and bringing wages and income up for those who are at the bottom of the income scale. So reducing that gap contributes to a really healthier, much healthier society, and certainly reduces that social and actual financial cost of conflict and ill health that we're already paying because we have high rates of poverty and inequality.
Jim McGregor, you offer the community school model as one way for people to join together in what I think you described as an overarching sustainable goal, like reducing the effects of child poverty while building community from within. Tell us more about that model and its potential impacts.
Sure. Well, the community school program is open to everyone in the Harewood community as its first offering. But as space is available and appropriate, anyone else within School District 68 is welcome. And it's for all ages. There is no requirement to have a student or a child registered in the school system. So everyone, all ages, the extended family, your neighbor, your grandmother, your cousin, your uncle, your in-laws, everyone is welcome. And what we do is we fill in, we meet community need for services and programs by building community from within. So by using people within the community who know how to perhaps lead a workshop, and we have the school resource to do it. So you can learn much more at our website. Just search for Harewood Community School. We are part of School District 68. And I have one other example that doesn't involve the school. And it's something that was in the newspapers just about a week or two ago, just around Thanksgiving. And it it was a group of masked community beautifiers. And they were people who just decided anonymously to go out into their community one Saturday morning and plant 200 daffodil, tulip, and hyacinth bulbs. Now, why would they do that? Well, they did that because we know that when your environment is welcoming and when people work together, it lessens the effects of poverty by tying those people together so that they can move on and do other programs and services. Helping your neighbor in need as you're able, the old-fashioned, I guess, way that we used to do it, alive and well in Nanaimo.
We have just a moment left in our conversation today. I'm wondering if there's anything else you'd like to add, Adrian Montani.
Yes. The issue of income inequality and child poverty in particular, addressing child poverty, or poverty generally, is not a partisan issue in our opinion, and we know the opposition has introduced a poverty reduction plan bill, a private member's bill. We'd like to see the government side of the house say, yep, we want to work together on making this happen. We do need a plan in this province, and there's a potential bill. Government could make it their own, and so that's the kind of cooperation we'd like to see on this issue from government.
Jim McGregor, anything you'd like to add?
Just a direct appeal to your listeners that as you are able to help one another, please do so. If you need the school facility and equipment to help in any of that, if you have an idea for a program or a service, please contact any of the four part-time community school coordinators. The four schools I should mention are NDSS, Nanaimo District Secondary, John Barsby Secondary, Fairview Elementary, and Georgia Avenue Elementary. We also work with the Harewood Neighborhood Association.
Thanks very much to both of you for taking the time to join us today, and it was very nice to speak with both of you again.
Thank you
for the opportunity.
Bye-bye.
Adrian Montani is the provincial coordinator with the First Call BC Child and Youth Advocacy Coalition. You can find First Call and a link to the 2011 Child Poverty Report Card online at firstcallbc.org. Jim McGregor is the community school coordinator at Nanaimo District Secondary School. You can find out more online at ndss.ca. November marks 22 years since the Canadian House of Commons adopted an all-party resolution to end child poverty in Canada. You can find out more about the lack of action to fulfill that pledge online at campaign2000.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.